Hello and welcome to another episode of Gemstone Mine. I'm John, and today we have another lesson from CEDH. CEDH is a metagame within the Commander format that sits at one extreme with highly consistent, highly efficient decks. Not all cards are equally powerful in all formats, or even in all metagames, but there are lessons to be learned from how people are brewing with the most powerful cards available in Magic. The Rule Zero conversation is a way that players can make sure that there is a relatively even playing field, an important thing to have when you're playing a format like Commander with so many different decks which can be tuned to so many different power levels. The concept of a Rule Zero conversation may be a foreign one to some people, if only because they have well-established playgroups where the Rule Zero conversation is largely unspoken or has been slowly honed over so many weeks or months that the goal of any particular game is already understood by everyone who comes to the table. My guest today is someone who's been very involved in playgroup building and is going to share some of their experiences with building a CEDH playgroup. Mercy, welcome to Gemstone Mine.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So Mercy, tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you get into Commander? How did you get into CEDH? Where do my people know you from?
Well, yeah, so I'm Mercy Grimm. I have a very small YouTube channel, but I haven't posted anything in a while. I'm kind of working on what to do with it. But I've been playing Commander since Lorwyn Block was standard legal. I've been kind of pushing the power level of Commander as best as I could pretty much the whole time, you know. I started with big battlecruiser decks, and then over time, just getting my butt kicked by my friends over and over, eventually I realized that what I wanted to be doing was casting more spells and doing more things and taking more game actions. So that just kind of pushes you closer and closer, I think, to the edge of what we think of now as CEDH. But, you know, back in the day, we didn't really call anything competitive or whatever. You just sat down against Scion of the Ur-Dragon and knew the game was going to be really quick.
That is pretty true. So it eventually did evolve into CEDH. What was the CEDH deck that got you into the metagame?
Oh, that's very easy. Heliod, the Sun Crowned. Heliod was a Theros Beyond Death rare, and he has a really simple to execute combo with the artifact creature Walking Ballista. And I've always been obsessed with mono white, but it's really been held back due to some design choices. And so building a fun mono white commander deck had always been something that just seemed like, why bother? You know, you're just going to sit there and do nothing and, you know, wrath the board a whole bunch of times. So when Heliod came out and gave you this extremely easy to execute combo kill for the whole table, that sort of just developed this entire archetype unto itself. How do we draw the game out, and how do we compete with green ramp or blue card draw or black removal or any of those other sort of hurdles that you typically find when building a commander deck? Well, Heliod is very cheap, and Heliod gives you a way to kill the table, and mono white has access to all these awesome stacks, pieces, and hate bears, so you can kind of drag the game out as long as you want. And that was the beginning of the end for me, because as soon as I got sort of tuned into the Heliod mindset and playing these high-powered games, then I was just, you know, getting whomped by Force of Wills and Mana Drains, and I was like, man, these blue cards sure are fun. So I started tutoring around with blue decks and picked up a Thrasios. So now I'm kind of really pushing my collection farther towards CEDH, and I'm really just trying to build one deck in kind of every archetype that interests me.
So CEDH kind of bit you the same way the Commander bug bites most of us, and how the Magic bug bit all of us to begin with.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's the thing with Magic is that I really enjoy the game, and 1v1 Magic is a beautiful thing that people get to play with each other. But the multiplayer aspect of Commander, the higher life totals leading to longer and more dynamic games, the interplay between like 25,000 different unique pieces. These are all things that you don't get to experience in regular 1v1 Commander, or 1v1 Magic rather, that Commander just feels not like its own game, but like a really incredible evolution of what Magic was.
I think a lot of our audience would be right there with you. I know I sure am. Well, Mercy, I met you through one of my mutual friends with you and one of my co-hosts, Jake, when he invited me to play on a Discord server that you had been instrumental in setting up. Why don't you talk about how that server got started?
Sure. So we play together. I know you from our Discord, the CEDH, which is something that I started right Around the time I built Heliod, which I think was like April or May of the year that Theros Beyond Death came out.
So April, May 2020.
Yes. And obviously we had a major world event going on at the time. COVID had really started its impact on our lives and on society. And one of the big hits that we all took was just not being able to hang out with each other, not being able to play. And obviously getting two people together, three people together, four people together for a couple of months there was really, really ill-advised. And so right away, I was like, man, I miss playing Magic, but I mostly miss playing Commander. Arena's really not cutting it for me. So I looked around and I realized that Spell Table was super popular. It was like a small, I guess, indie developer of Magic players who were just like, wow, playing Magic online is way more harder than it needs to be and really complicated in ways that it should not be. So they built this really incredible program, and I was like, okay, well, that's all the hard work done. We don't have to fiddle around with Cockatrice and making all these stupid accounts. We can just play Commander online with our paper cards, which is all I really need for this to work. But I live in a very isolated, small community where all of the paper Magic players I am friends with are pretty enfranchised, and they're not really computer people, you know? And mm-hmm. So I'm a member of an online community called the Something Awful Forums, and there's a robust, massive, utterly massive gaming community there. I would say almost maybe the majority of its users are like gamers, so to speak. And right. So there's a contingent of people who play Commander, and I was like, hey, Commander guys, and gals, I can't help but notice that, no one's really playing Magic right now. So if anyone's interested in playing some high-level competitive Magic, I would love for you to join me. And I started a server, but I specifically asked for a competitive because I had just built this Heliod deck and I really wanted to play that. And, you know, like I said, I started playing Commander in 2012. So I've had, conservative estimate, thousands of Battlecruiser games under my belt. It's not mm-hmm. that I don't love that style of Magic, but like, I've already spent years of my life, you know, waiting for the turn 9 pop-off or whatever, when somebody gets in a chroma and, like, gives her double strike or whatever. Like, ooh, that's amazing. But that's not where I want to be anymore. So okay. I put out the invite, and the response was really nice. Right away, we had, like, 8 or 9 goons, that's what we call ourselves on the Something Awful Forums. We're all goons. So I had 8 or 9 goons show up, and it's been a dream, to be honest. I mean, you know, online communities can be very difficult to manage. They can be very toxic. It's really easy to be infiltrated by people who are just mean and, don't have the game in mind. But the people who have joined our Discord, by and large, are genuinely some of the nicest and kindest people I've ever hung out with online, and our games together really, really helped me through the pandemic. You know, there's no question about that. Just being able to, every week, every other week, know that for at least 2 hours on weekends, I could hang out with a couple of really chill people and get some really awesome, high-powered games in.
It's been a real lifesaver to me, too. That's where I've been able to play CEDH with the shutdown happening around the beginning of the pandemic. So I was really grateful to find the community that you were building at that time. Now, one of the things that you mentioned was that you wanted to build this as a VEDH using Spell Table. So the parlance of VEDH, Video EDH, Webcam Commander, however you want to refer to it. You also mentioned Cockatrice. What was your reason for wanting to use Spell Table as opposed to another modality like Cockatrice?
Well, first of all, I want to say that my preference is Webcamander. That's how I had it explained to me, so that's what I've always referred to it.
I like that.
So Cockatrice has been around for a very long time. I'm very familiar with that program. And Cockatrice is kind of like when you turn 16 and you have these dreams of like a fancy, cool car. And then that your grandpa gives you like his grocery store mobile with 300,000 miles on it and like 3 tires. And you're like, okay, like, I guess this is good enough. Cockatrice, it's a janky program. It's got the old like Moto style interface. I'm just not interested in that. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, I'm a very tactile person. In general, the physical sensation of things like shuffling, cutting a deck, feeling my cards in my hand, that's That's part of the game to me in a way that I think is maybe a little silly to some people, but it, you know, playing Arena on my computer is a totally different experience from playing Magic with my cards that I've spent my life collecting and trading into, you know, like I'm emotionally invested in these little pieces of cardboard, some of which are pretty pricey, and I take great pains to make them look nice with cool sleeves and playmats and stuff. So the whole point of using your paper cards in this online way, I think that was just the point, is I don't want my cards to sit in my closet for the next 2 years while we wait for people to get vaccinated. I want to play with them. So that way I don't feel like I'm trapped in my room waiting for the death cloud to dissipate or whatever. There are other ways to play Commander online, but if you've never tried to play Commander in the Modo leagues on Magic the Gathering online, it's truly meme worthy. I mean, like, if you just stick your toe in or like look up some screenshots of chat logs, and you'll just see like the first sign of interaction, you know, a single counterspell hits the stack and people just bail on these games. Not everyone, I'm certainly not saying that, but any experience I've had trying to play with randos through maybe a public Discord or a Reddit organization, something like that, I just feel like there's no investment in these games because these are all strangers you're playing with. You're never going to see them again. And so it's really easy for people to just walk away or be scummy or, you know, like misrepresent their decks. You know, that's a big problem online, is people say like, let's all play casual, and then you sit down and you like Dark Ritual into a Trinisphere, and everyone's like, what are you doing? And you're like, well, this is my casual Jund Dragons deck, so I'm just slowing the game down so I have time to play my, you know, like those are the kind of things you'll deal with in those kind of blind metas. And so I think one of the benefits of our playgroup is that we've all kind of become, you know, I don't want to say like friends, like it's weird or whatever, but I talk to you guys as much as I talk to any of my other online communities. You know, like if I have a cool idea for a deck, or if I think a card may or may not be good enough, I'm coming to you first before I'm coming to literally anybody else, because like I said, we're all kind of in it for the same reasons. We love Magic, we just want to get better at the game. Competitive EDH, CEDH is, I think, the best way available to all of us to become better Magic players currently, because there's no tournaments to grind for. There's no PTQs. We're not back doing Magic Fest or Command Fest yet. So sincerely, how are you supposed to get better at Magic right now if you're only playing, you know, Battle Cruiser games where everyone's just trying to, you know, like clone a bunch of mutated Scoot Swarms or whatever?
Personally, I still enjoy the casual games. I've got my decks all the way down to my mono-white Scrap Trawler Oketra deck that I've gone on length about on this podcast. But certainly, I can see where you're coming from, and the community that you've put together is really great, Mercy. And one of the things that is really different in the CEDH community as a whole, the greater metagame, is that there are a lot of individual servers for individual deck archetypes or deck strategies. For example, right now, just looking at my list of Discords that I'm on, I am in the Sans Green server, I am in a Turbo Gnaws server, I am in a Thief server, and Mercy, I think you are in the Mono White server. There are servers for all these different deck archetypes. One of the things that you've done with the community that you're building is your focus is not on any particular deck archetype, but rather just the experience of getting a diverse group of players together to play CEDH games.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's easy to fall in love with a deck. And I think when you fall in love with a commander deck and you grind, you know, mad games with it, I think a couple of things happen right away. You become more focused on what the deck can't do than what it can do, you know, because when a deck functions and you win, or you submit a threat and then get countered or whatever, like, your deck is doing what it's supposed to do, and those games aren't really going to sit in your head, or at least not sit in my head, the same way a loss is going to. And so after, you know, 50 games with Heliod or whatever, it's like, man, I'd love to interact more, you know, or then you build your blue, white, black counterspells deck or whatever, and then you're like, man, I'd really like to present a threatening creature. I'd like to have some board presence. And so you sort of develop these different ideas. And I think that when you get pigeonholed into like one community or one server, and you're like, I'm a Razaketh player and that's all I ever do, or I'm a Heliod player and that's all I ever do, I think you're selling yourself short. There's this idea of transposition, right? That techniques you learn from one archetype, let's say Mono White Heliod, that translate to other decks. For example, playing Heliod was a really interesting experience to break into CDH, but then you take some time and you play Urza, another mono white stacks deck with a combo kill.
Or mono blue stacks deck.
Or mono blue, right? Or Godo, Bandit Warlord, a mono red kind of stacks deck with a combo kill. And you see, like, wow, actually these decks, despite being totally different colors and attacking the game in completely different ways, they're doing a lot of the same things. And some of the things that you learn about going for a kill, reading the table, deciding whether or not you should play more stacks to develop your board or use a very narrow window to force a kill. Like, all of these things are things that apply to all three of those decks, you know, pretty much equally. And once I realized that, I realized that by focusing on one deck, I was holding myself back as a Magic player. You know, there are five colors of Magic. Being the best white player in the world, you know, or whatever your goal is, doesn't make you the best Magic player. And in fact, it only makes you 20% as good as someone who's, you know, devoted their life to just being good at the game, right? And that's what I want. I don't want to be a good blue-black player. I don't want to be a good Boros player. I just want to be a good Magic player.
And I think everybody's goals there really are different. Some people, for example, Dr. Levine has been making himself well known as the mono white player. And a lot of people do have their own niches that they really enjoy. Some people just want to hone that one deck. But the community that you've built is just dedicated to bringing a lot of different diverse decks from different areas together. And then when we get our games going, we throw them all together and see what comes out on top.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that I appreciate about our meta is there's just the constant implicit understanding that we're maxing out. We're all cranking it up to 11 every game because that's what we want to be doing. And I think that even among other sort of CDH communities, I think sometimes you'll be in a situation where you sit down and people will be like, oh, you're playing Malcolm? That's not really like a tier one CDH deck. And it's like, well, hey, buddy, you know, like, I was a whole Breacher combo deck until they banned it a week ago. You know, I'm doing all the same things you're doing. I'm playing all the same cards. What do you mean I can't hang? You know, I think we've never, I think, even approached a conversation like that on our Discord server. I have faith in you that when you shuffle up 100 cards or 98 cards or whatever to sit down against me, what you're doing is you're bringing the nastiest Malcolm and Kedis pirate deck that you can think of to the table.
There's another content creator whose work I really enjoy, Rebel Sun, and one
She's
of the things
fantastic.
That she said that really stuck with me was the idea that if you're playing in good faith into the metagame, then you are doing the right thing. Yes, one of your experiments may not turn out to work right, so be it. But if you're showing up with a deck that's ready to interact on turn, you know, 2.5, 3.5, when other people could already be going for it, then you're playing in good faith, and that is something that should be respected in the community, just because that is the chance for the community to continue to grow and see more diversity in the metagame. Now, you have organized things a little bit differently than some of the other servers that I've joined. For one thing, you actually track wins after games, noting things like seeding order, the turn that the game came to an end on, the pilot, and the deck that took the win. What led to that idea?
So it's very simple. There are two episodes of The Command Zone, which is like the premier original Commander content, sort of.
If somehow you found us and didn't know about The Command Zone already.
Yeah, and I'll say this, even as like a totally cutthroat CDH player, there's still value to be had in watching The Command Zone. Even if you don't, you know, watch every episode, like, look into it, check out those titles. Those are really smart guys who really understand this game and understand how to have fun with the game. But they have two episodes where they go into stats. They go into things like, how many times did a turn one soul ring lead to the win? How, you know, what is the impact of turn order and this and that? And I was like, oh my goodness, you know, this is really crucial. Let me tell you a quick anecdote to explain. One of my best friends in college is a metal guitarist, and he, when he was 21, as a joke, because he was totally self-taught, bought himself a metronome. after a week, I was hanging out with him. He was really pissed off. I say, Doug, what's the problem? He goes, Mercy, I feel like I've wasted my life. I go, what do you mean? He says, I bought this metronome, and suddenly I realized, like, I would just be 10 times the guitar player I was if I'd been using a metronome the entire time. My entire career, all the records I've released, all the songs I've written, I just would have had better timing and been a better, you know, guitar player if I'd just been using this tool the entire time instead of, like, buying it as a joke a week ago. And I've really internalized that. There's data. Every time you sit down to play Magic, there's data. There's answers to these questions. And if you're not asking them, then those answers aren't making you stronger. And so I wanted to know, what exactly is the impact of this turn order? I call turn order the luck stat. Do you go first? How many times do you go first? What impact does that have on your win rate? And then when I started tracking win rates, I was like, well, I should track win rates by deck. And then I realized that tracking win rates by deck doesn't really do anything if you're not tracking what decks you're playing against. And so I started to build this kind of semi-comprehensive data set. And so every time I sit down, I track all of these different things in the hopes that at the end of the year, I'll be able to look at all the games of Commander that I've played and discern, like, okay, Crick does really well in these pods. Crick does very poorly in these pods. Let's figure out why. When you study statistics or philosophy at any high level, something that comes up a lot is this idea of the Socratic questioning method, which is basically attacking the root answer of a question with another question so that you can go a level deeper. I know that's like a really weird metaphysical idea, but every answer that you get when tracking your data in a game of Commander gives you an opportunity to ask another question to go deeper to further understand that data. And I think that's really that's the frontier that I'm most interested in terms of like becoming a better Commander player. Without tracking this data, I have no idea if my decks are good, if my approach to this metagame is working, if building this hardcore turbo deck versus a more mid-range deck is appropriate. You know, just let me look at the data. Are these fast turbo games really paying off over a long enough sample size, or am I throwing games away by running Jeweled Amulet and Rite of Flame when I could just be running more draw engines? You know, that's kind of what I'm trying to do.
And one thing we do have to look at and acknowledge in that case is that when we're looking at data and statistics, sample size matters. So you mentioned that you're going to be looking over kind of the course of the entire year.
Yeah.
And looking at our server, you have results, I think, going back as far as February of this year. And we've got a pretty decent number of games in there so far.
Yeah, we actually, we've been tracking, I think, every game that we've ever played. I don't know how far back our chat logs go, but it was a very dumb eureka moment back in February where someone was like, we should just make a separate channel to post the stats in so we don't keep losing them whenever someone spoils a new card or talks about anime. And I was like, wow, that's a really incredibly smart thing I wish I'd done a year ago. But I've been tracking all of my paper games and my online games for about 2 years now. And I don't know, it's fun for me. And also it just kind of helps me get into the zone, you know, when I bust out my little notepad and I'm like, all right, it's gamer time. You know, like I that's the relationship I have with my stats, you know.
And one of the things that it's taught me to do as just trying to help this when we play CDH is I actually put a spin down die on the corner of my playmat so I can actually track what turn we are on. I don't use it to track life totals, I use it to track turn. And this can be a really useful tool for anybody who's trying to up their game and learn a little bit more and do some analysis. Just look at what turn it is when you're taking different actions or different things are happening. It can be very eye-opening when you think you're playing a very slow, grindy game, but it's only turn 4 and things are already starting to pop off. It can mean something very different for how you really want to be improving and constructing your decks in the future.
Absolutely. One of my CDH decks is an Exodus Mardu Mad Farm deck, and when I built it, I'd envisioned it to be like kind of a turbo ad nauseum sort of deck, but after a bunch of games with it, you look at the data and you're like, oh, like when I'm winning on turn 5 or 6 because I've been like disruptive, not because I'm racing the Grixis turbo players or whatever. So you know, just right there, that was an example of the data immediately giving me feedback and helping me to push a deck in the direction the deck wanted to go and not the direction I thought the deck needed to go.
Very true. I had similar experiences. Again, Mercy, your server was the one where I finally got to test Malcolm and Kedis for the first time.
Pyroblast, on site.
Initially, I was building it as a Blue Moon style deck, trying to run a lot of back to basics and Blood Moon effects, which slowed things down certainly, but it didn't wind up being the direction that I wound up taking the deck based on how it played into our metagame.
Yeah, I had the same experience with the Thrasios and Chrom deck. Same thing, Blood Moon back to basics. You think these cards are going to be really good, and then you realize, like, wow, every time I, like, slow the game down, I'm actually kind of taking a really important turnout from myself. Like, every time I'm playing these slowdown cards, I could just be aggressively pushing the game towards a win, and that was the same data I found.
Yeah. Another thing that I've really enjoyed about the server that we've been getting into recently are these, not necessarily pre-game talks, but, like, post-game talks. I feel like our pregame talk, as I described at the beginning of the episode, we kind of already have understood what we're going for with this server. Yeah. By being a part of this community, we are all trying to play CEDH decks, and certainly if you want to bring something spicy to the table, do so. But these post-game talks have been really interesting, where we sit down after the game, and why don't you tell us about those?
Sure. So I think one of the most important things going on in a Commander game at any point is that you've only got access to your own thoughts. You've only got access to your own head, and you've only got the information that the game is providing, right? Whether or not you've got a Gitaxian probe or whatever, and you've got more information is up in the air, but you never know what your opponents are thinking, right? You can make guesses, and, you know, after 50 games against somebody, you might know their deck list as well as you know your own, but you might not know the pathways that they're going through in their mind. So I think lots of times I will kind of take note of when I think the game has turned, when I think, like, oh, this is the moment when, you know, Malcolm and Kedis is going to take over and the value is going to be too great or whatever. But then after we play, I think it's really important to be like, hey, Jack, when I fought you over that Blood Moon or whatever, was that important, you know, or did you care, or did I throw my counterspell away? Or, hey, Karma, you know, when I killed Kenrith during combat, like, did that matter at all? Because you didn't reanimate anything in response, so obviously you needed the mana for something else. Being able to answer those questions, going back to data, it gives you these important answers so that the next time that comes up, or a similar situation comes up, or that stack comes up, you be like, oh, you know what, the last time this happened, Karma was baiting me, I'm just gonna let this resolve. Or, you know, like, I think I just had a game where Smothering Tithe caused, you know, it was maybe a 15 minute game and then probably 20 minutes of discussing whether or not it was correct to let the Smothering Tithe at the table afterwards, and I think I got more out of that post-game conversation than I gotten out of the game itself.
Yeah, and the idea of it that, well, I think what you're hitting on is that Magic is a game of hidden information, of incomplete information.
Yeah.
We do not know what's on the other person's hand, and when the only information that you have realistically is your own hand, and then what's showing on the battlefield, a lot of it comes down to intuition, experience, and trying to decipher some of the hidden information. But what is in your hand drastically changes your threat assessment. If the only piece of interaction you have in hand is a way to get rid of an artifact or an enchantment, it is going to drastically alter the way you see the board. Creatures may not even be registering in the same way, or you may be hyper-focused on a creature that is warping the game state.
Yeah, one of the formative Magic experiences I had as a little kid was reading about this decklist John Finkel had brought to a tournament in which he had just main decked for telepathy. And, you know, no one else was doing that. No one else was even thinking about doing that. But of course, it's John Finkel, and he just effortlessly sweeps himself up to the top four of this event. And he, you know, said in the post interview, like, it's because I always knew what my opponent was doing, you know, like, he's the kind of player who leverages information as a lethal weapon, and so he knew by adding telepathy to his deck, he would add information, you know, to his game state. And I think that the post-game discussions we've been having, I think, are really critical to not only understanding the mistakes that you made, but also the mistakes that we're making. You know, like, I think it's as much a give as it is a take, you know? Like, I'm just as interested in you letting me know know when I messed up as I am in letting you know when I think you made a mistake or I think your threat assessment may have led us to feed the game to somebody else. I think, you know, because I can't tell it's a mistake in the moment. If I thought it was the right play, I thought it was the right play. I might not even register that it was a misplay until afterwards when you're like, by the way, Mercy, you know, when you countered that spell, it didn't really matter because of X, Y, and Z, or you missed that I have Lurus in play and I would have just reanimated, you know. Those kinds of things are super relevant, but, you know, have you ever tried to track a two-hour game of CDH when there's 10 stacks pieces and over 100 cards in people's graveyards? Like, there's no way you're going to get every single data point in the middle of the game. So the post-game debrief, I think, is really crucial to give you a more complete picture of the war that we just waged.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that has really been great about it too, in addition to just gaining information and making ourselves better players, which is something I'm always interested in, it also provides a really great way to diffuse some situations. One thing in CEDH is that we can often get very focused on whether a play was good or bad, and there's a lot of connotation with that. Players can sometimes be upset if they think that another player quote-unquote threw the game. King-making is a discussion that we see a lot in the CEDH community, and people can get very emotionally involved with it. These post-game discussions, where we go through our thought process, they go such a long way to keeping our community and our playgroup strong, because we don't let those things, we don't get to walk away from the games mad. We sit down afterwards and we talk about it and we say, no, the reason that I thought that, Mercy, you resolving that rule of law, I had to stop it because I was going for the win next turn. And if I didn't stop it, I would not be able to get my ad nauseum off. And I needed to do so because this was my last window to go for that win.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that it's also crucial just to building the community. You know, I want to exist in a place not where I can just play Magic, but where I can talk about Magic. I can theorize, you know, I can get into the really nitty gritty metaphysical concepts, you know, things like probability, deck thinning, all that kind of stuff. I want to feel, you know, not to use a silly phrase, but like I have a safe space to get as in-depth and nerdy as I want about this game that I'm so passionate about. And the post-game talks, I think, have really helped because it shows, like, you know, we've put together a playgroup where we're all on that level, you know? We might not all like the same TV shows. We all come from certainly different walks of life. But I think we've curated a group of people who are all really dedicated to understanding Magic and becoming better Magic players.
The post-game talk, I think, is a great place for us to bring an end to our talk today, too. Mercy, thanks again for coming on and talking with us and sharing with us all these things that you had helped to build this really great community. Is it okay if we include an invite to your Discord as part of our show notes today?
Yeah, absolutely. Be aware, obviously, as audience members of yours, I think it's important to let everyone know we're an entirely inclusive. We're all about people from all walks of life, all gender, non-binary, men, women, whatever you like. You know, we're really fun, happy-go-lucky people. We talk about anime and video games and stuff. Please come bring your A game, and proxy is 100% available. All of us are huge proxy people. Please play whatever cards you want to the highest power level you possibly can. And I promise that if you put in the time with us, we will make you a better Magic player and a cooler person.
Now let me throw it out there to our audience. How have you gone about building your playgroups? How do you go about having your post-game conversations? Let us know in the comments. On YouTube, we are Gemstone Mine Podcast. You can also add us on Twitter, where we are at GemstoneMineMTG, or you can send us an email, where we are GemstoneMinePodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, I'm John, and this is Gemstone Mine.